rockzone.com.
Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Welcome to the How to Tour Italy show, and this is my last show, if you will, stateside here. The rest of my shows going forward will be recorded live from Italy, so I'm looking forward to that. I leave on Tuesday, and I arrive, of course, on Wednesday afternoon in beautiful Roma. So I'm looking forward to a fantastic flight and an even better summer and fall spent in Italy for the How to Tour Italy project. If you don't know what that is, just listen to some of my recorded podcasts from the radio show here and get caught up on what the How to Tour Italy project is all about. I'm very excited, and I do want to say a few things before I get started on my first segment about the Colosseum and the Gladiators. My second segment, however, it's going to be a little bit self-indulgent. I'm going to be talking about my own book, Una Bella Vista Rome, and my audio tour that goes along with it. And then, of course, the last segment will be with my two friends, Kathy McCabe of Dream of Italy and Janice Mancuso of 31 Days of Italians. So I'm looking forward to that as well. I do want to send a little shout-out. I got a couple of fantastic emails this past week, and I'm very excited about that. So I wanted to say thank you very much to Stephen and Damon for sending a couple of wonderful emails with some great information about traveling to Italy and their experiences there. And they introduced me to their blog, Due Bicicletta. And it's written in French, actually, so I'm not sure if I'm saying two right. In Italian, it's due, but I think it's due in French. So if you have any inclination, please visit their blog. They've got a really, really fantastic travel history with awesome photos of their bicycling tour through France and Italy. And then I'd also like to say thank you to Nancy and Luigi. The title of her email was First Time to Italy, and she sends lots of congratulations and thanks for my radio show and some great compliments. And thank you so much for listening. Feel free, Stephen, Damon, Nancy, and Luigi, to call in or email anytime. I'd love to have you on as guests on the show to talk a little bit about your experiences there and to share some of your wonderful tips, because I know Luigi is a Roman. He was born in Rome. So any insight that you may have as a local would be wonderful. So please, by all means, contact me via email, and I'll reach out to you, and maybe we can have you on the show sometime. So with that, I do want to kind of transition over and talk about the Colosseum and the Gladiators. It is one of those sites that many, many people go to, and I think they don't often put two and two together about what's actually going on at the Colosseum. It is probably one of the most well-known, I would say, well-known buildings in the world. I would argue that very few people wouldn't be able to recognize it, at least by its picture. And many people kind of get what goes on there, but I'm not so sure they understand how many hundreds of thousands of people were put to their deaths there, and what it really was all about. So I thought I would spend a little time. I read a book called The Gladiator, The Secret History of Rome's Warrior Slaves by Alan Baker. It is a fantastic book. And if Mr. Baker's listening, please, I'd love to have you on as a show and interview a little bit more and in depth and talk a little bit more about the research that you did. And because this is just a wonderful book, everybody, and it's a great read. And at the end of it, he talks a little bit about kind of a day in the life of a gladiator and what it was like being at, you know, going to the games in Rome. So with that, I'm going to talk a little bit about what the games were for and what the Colosseum were, why it was built and that kind of thing. So let me start out by saying that before the Colosseum was built, Italy had its gladiatorial games, and they were held in other places. I mean, there were Colosseums built. They weren't called Colosseums back then. They were just called amphitheaters. Verona, Pompeii, Syracuse, the outer reaches of the empire, they had their Colosseums, if you will. And the reason the Colosseum, or where it gets its name originally, it was built on the grounds of Nero's Golden Palace. And it was where it was built, where Nero had his interior lakes, if you will, inside his Golden Palace. And the reason it was called, or it was called going from Flavian's amphitheater, and I'll tell you what Flavian, where that comes from. The reason it was switched to being named Colosseum is because it had a massive statue called the Colossus of the Emperor Nero. In front of the Colosseum, or where the Colosseum stands today, there used to be a massive Colossus statue of him. So obviously they tore that down. He died, or was rather forced to commit suicide because he was insane. And we'll spend another segment of the show talking a little bit about the craziness of some of the more popular, or more, I guess, maybe better known emperors, and Nero's definitely one of them. So what they did, Flavian, or rather Vespasian, became emperor. He came and he had to win back the mob or the Roman people. And in order to do so, he knew he had to take a very drastic building step, and he built the Colosseum or the Flavian Amphitheater. And the reason he did that is to kind of support the Romans' love of the games. And there are lots of different levels of the games. We're going to talk a little bit about what they are, but think about this for a second. He built something in place or where the, you know, Nero had built his lakes and built something and gave it completely to the people. It was free to get in, and they were entertained sometimes for days and weeks at a time. And when the games were there and being, you know, put on, Rome was rather a desolate city. Many, many people went, and, you know, the philosophers and different people had their opinions of what was actually going on there. But most Romans enjoyed the games. You know, the difference between the plebeians and the patricians, which is kind of, for lack of a better term, plebeians lower class, patricians upper class, with their education and their lifestyle and what they did for a living, how much they earned. The plebeians would get in for free, and the patricians often paid for the games. So it was kind of a hand-in-hand kind of, if you will, they worked symbiotically together to deliver the greatness of the games to the Roman people. So the games, however, just keep in mind, were a political event. They were meant to keep the people happy. They served a couple of purposes. They were used for executions. They were used to show the power and might of Rome. They were used to show that the Romans could overpower and destroy, you know, other tribes, other civilizations, other cultures, both from famous times within history. They would often duplicate or reenact famous battles and wars that were fought. They would have naval battles. They would often have battles against wild animals. They would pit wild animals against wild animals, and they would execute in public criminals. And crucifixion, I think, was the second worst form of being, you know, put to death. I think the first worst form is just being thrown to the lions. So you can understand what that meant, what the Romans were doing that to the Christians back in the day. So I'm going to talk a little bit about going forward here, some of the things that people may not know about the gladiatorial games. So first of all, before the Colosseum was built in Rome, with the amphitheater, they held games throughout Rome itself. And one of the more popular locations was just outside of Circus Maximus, which is near the Palatine Hill. And they were built in wooden structures or things that were, you know, not as quote unquote stable as the Colosseum is today. In fact, one of the structures was built so that it was two semicircles facing each other, and it was on a pivot so all of the spectators could see what was going on in the middle of the arena. Well, that collapsed, and over 50,000 people were at the games and were killed and or maimed with this wooden structure. So that also played a large part on why something more substantial had to be built, because it was such a popular attraction for the Romans to attend. Now, think about that today. If 50,000 people are at an event and the structure collapsed, what kind of uproar would go on? And it barely a blip in anyone's radar when they talk about the Colosseum. But this is one of those things that the Romans, I guess we take for granted in terms of safety and precaution. And, you know, back in the day, I mean, things like this would happen. So let me talk a little bit about the mindset, I think, of the ancient Romans as well. Now, they looked at the death and destruction and the, for lack of a better term, torture that was going on inside the arena as just. And they looked at it as either just punishment because you did something wrong and this is what you deserve. Or, I guess you could call it winner take all, for lack of a better term. And what I mean by that is you pit man against man. And in a lot of cases, women against women, because women did fight in the Colosseum or in the gladiatorial games. And, you know, may the best person win, man or woman. And if you won, that you were more powerful, you deserved to win. You could sometimes survive and still have lost based on the judgment of the crowd and or the emperor with the thumb up or thumb down. I believe thumb down meant you lived, thumb up meant you died. And I've heard kind of conflicting stories, so I'll never really know for sure. But that's one of the things that people don't know, that you, just because you were a gladiator didn't mean that you actually had to go in, and if you lost, you died. Sometimes you did survive. Now, the other side of this, the gladiators were owned, and they were considered kind of an acting troupe, if you will. And these gladiators would be taken into the arena. They were trained, and people were dedicated to making sure that they could perform well, because the one thing the Romans did not like was were weak performances. So they were taught to use the weapons they were trained to use, and they would take on the characteristics of different fighting styles, characteristics that you could use a net and a trident or a sword. In fact, a gladiator is named after a straight sword, which is called a gladius. So that's where we get the term gladiator from. So all of these people were trained by professionals that were either former gladiators or part of the Roman army, and were taught to use these weapons and use them very, very well, defend themselves and to attack, and also how to, most importantly, die with dignity, to try not to run and or I guess, soil yourself in the midst of these battles, because the Romans, the worst thing they wanted to see was to see someone, I guess, die with no dignity, because the Romans believed that in life and in death, one must have dignity. And that's a lot about what these games are about. In fact, freemen often became gladiators by their own choice. Now, I want you to think about that for a second. They're saying, I want to become worse than a slave. I want to become a gladiator. I want you to teach me how to fight, and I'm going to go in the arena, and there's a really good chance I'm going to be dead in by my third or fourth appearance in inside the arena. And the reason they did that is because of the fame and the fortune that it brought. You could make yourself wealthy if you managed to survive and actually become free, as a result of your success in the arena. Now, in order to become free, you were given the wooden sword called a rudis, R-U-D-I-S. It didn't happen very often, and it's because you're fighting other masters of the craft. You didn't go in as an amateur and fight an experienced professional. They tried to pit people against their skill level, so that they were, again, good fights. So you're not going to get lucky if you're a four-year veteran. You're not going to fight a rookie, unless, of course, that rookie's there to die intentionally because they're a criminal. So kind of taking a step forward here, we have different types of gladiatorial fights. We had ad bestias, which means you were going to be killed by an animal. That means you were chained to something or hung out and kind of dabbled in blood. And when they would release a lion, a tiger, a bear, or something that was starving, they'd starve it for a little bit of time so that when it come out, it would do its duty and destroy you instantaneously if you could only hope. They had venatones, which were the hunts, where they would literally fill the arena with trees and make it look like a forest, and the venatores would go out there and literally hunt down these animals with spears and bow and arrows and swords, sometimes with their bare hands. It would just depend. And give you an idea of the destruction, in the inauguration of the games, over 9,000 animals were killed. So I want you to think about that. 9,000 animals, lions, tigers, bears, rhinoceroses, seals, you name it. It was out there. And where did they get these? They got all these animals from the far reaches of the empire. They paid big, big money for people to go out and do these hunts, bring these animals back to Rome, and just to have them sacrificed for the games. Now, in Rome, they had to store these animals like they had to store the gladiators. So they had essentially zoos that were owned and managed by the emperor to actually throw them to be sacrificed into the arena for the games. We had people called bestiari. They actually would go out and fight animals one-on-one. That was their job in life. So there's a couple different ways to kill the animals here. Julius Caesar himself, one of his major contributions is he put 500 elephants inside the arena. It wasn't the Colosseum at the time, because it wasn't built during his reign, of course. And 500 elephants were killed in a single slaughter inside the arena. Now, after all this death and destruction, they would send people out with spears with big hooks on them and drag these carcasses out of there. They had water with perfume inside the Colosseum that could be sprayed to kind of get rid of the stench and the smell. I don't know how you would do that in the Roman heat. It's beyond me, considering that's one thing I can't even get my head around is how what it smelled like. So then they would clean this out. They would have people come and turn the sand over so it would be fresh between each battle. You know, the executions often came during the lunch hour, and that meant, you know, death by whatever means necessary. One of the more interesting ways, I thought, and at least in Alan Baker's book anyway, they would put two criminals out, one without a knife and one with a knife. Of course, the gentleman with the knife would kill the one without the knife, and so on and so forth. Then he would give up the knife to the next criminal, so he would be unarmed and would get killed by the person with the knife. And this would go on until all the criminals were dead. And then finally, with the last person standing, a soldier would come out and slice his throat, and he would be gone. So I want you to, you know, think back of when you're walking through the Colosseum, how many hundreds of thousands of animals and people died here. And when you're looking at the Colosseum, and it is a beautiful structure, and it is kind of it just kind of displays the might of Rome, but it is something that people take for granted in terms of its beauty, and sometimes overlook what was really going on there. Gentlemen that owned the gladiators were called lanista. And like I said before, they had females that would go in and fight. You can win your freedom, and you'd be given that wooden sword, the rudis. They were some of the more popular locations, for at least the, you know, Colosseums or the amphitheaters: Rome, Verona, Pompeii, Syracuse. And in fact, Spartacus escaped from one of the schools. It was called Eludi, the gladiator school. And he escaped with a bunch of other gladiators and was on the run for about a year and a half. The Roman Empire had to actually send in the Roman army to defeat him. And it took quite a bit of time because they were seasoned fighters. They thought dying fighting with dignity was better than, you know, dying in the arena. So it took about a year and a half to quash the rebellion of Spartacus. Now, he ended up dying down in Calabria. They managed to kind of box him in. And he died because a lot of his troops at the time thought they would be successful without him. He was a brilliant strategist to be able to avoid and continuously win battles against a seasoned and powerful and well-trained Roman army. So good for him. He did very good things. However, he ultimately died and was hanged and left to rot on, I think it was a crucifix down in Calabria. So, you know, that's what you got. The Romans were pretty rough end of the day. But I think politically speaking, you had to consider everything that was done in the arena was to win over the mob, to make the Romans happy, to show the power of the emperor. In fact, the emperor was the only person allowed to actually throw games, except with the exception of one time of year, about a month long, when other prominent citizens could invest money and throw games to win political favor. But one of the fears that the emperor had, that they would be outdone, first and foremost, and that people would favor a particular senator or a particular rich person versus the emperor. So they put controls over that and made it so that you couldn't throw games whenever you wanted. You can only do it once a month. This way the emperor controlled everything. And then when you did throw games, there were different levels of these games. It was kind of, think of it like zero to, you know, $100 you threw on kind of minimal games that didn't have a huge attraction, all the way up to kind of million-dollar games, if you will. You had very extravagant executions and very extravagant animal hunts and the best gladiators fighting against the best gladiators. In fact, when they would be brought out, the gladiators would be walked into the arena in a big parade. And so you knew all the gladiators that were fighting, but you didn't know who was going to be fighting who. That would be decided as you went. And people would bet on these games and who was going to win the battle. And they often would pair different types of gladiator fighting styles against others so that it would always come out to be a wonderful fight. Now, one thing I do want to say, I've got about a minute and a half here about these, that many times animals would be chained together. So one of the more popular fights would be between a bull and a bear. They'd be literally chained together and released into the arena, and they would destroy each other, claw each other, eat each other to pieces, and just be left into massive heaps on the arena floor. And this would go on for hours, not just those two fighting. As soon as they were done, they'd release two more. And then in the middle of these gladiatorial fights, they would release animals to come in and do their best to destroy whoever they were going out for the hunt for. So lots of different things are going on, and I'm going to be covering this specifically in Rome. I'm going to be doing a video for the How to Turelli project from outside and inside the Colosseum, talking a little bit about how the animals and the warriors got into the arena, what the arches and in the walkways, because you did have a ticket and you had a numbered section, and the way things were laid out, you sat according to class, and a bunch of other stuff. So with that, I've got to kind of fly into a break here. I'm going to come back and talk a little bit about Una Bella Vista Rome, my guidebook. But I'm fascinated about the Colosseum, and I will be dedicating quite a bit of time in video and in radio segments in the future to talk about it in more detail. Ciao.
Dreaming of renting a villa in Italy? Papavero Villa Rentals, your Italy experts, will make that dream come true. We specialize in Italy 100% of the time. It's our passion, and we love what we do. We're experts on travel to Italy, and we're here to help you plan the perfect trip. From the Italian Alps to the beaches of Sicily, we personally select each property to assure your comfort. We travel to Italy multiple times a year to inspect and revisit each property to assure your physical comfort as well. We thump the pillows, check the water pressure, and sleep in the beds. We know each property intimately and are happy to help you choose the one that best suits your desires. And we don't stop there. Our frequent trips to Italy enable us to arrange day tours and services, all pre-approved by us, so you can book with confidence. No matter what your dream may be, a stunning villa with staff on Lake Como, a country cottage in Tuscany, a chic apartment in Rome, or anything in between, trust your dream to Papavero Villa Rentals. Call us toll-free at 1-866-737-0000. That's 1-866-737-0000. Or visit us online at papaverorentals.com.